And Sandy, say hello to Arthur Levy.
Arthur, how are you?
It looks like he's got next Sunday's tongue.
How's Andrea?
Does he have the book review section?
Yeah. How's the baby?
Yeah. You can come in and sit here in here if you want. It's all right with...
Oh, sure. It's all right with me.
Is that next
you remember
Sunday?
Joe?
Is that next?
Of course.
He's my collaborator.
Hey, show him the egg.
Huh?
Show him the egg.
I'm going to show you some Mazel.
Mazel?
My copy of the New York Times.
Yeah.
Wow.
I printed it off the page.
No kidding.
Yes, exactly.
That's going to be...
Is this karma?
That's a rare edition. Look. They printed off the page.
Review, the one page, the one thing.
The only thing you wanted to see.
This is for you, okay. CNN.
You're a dear man. I'm coming down. I want to see Marilyn.
And we have a conference call at 3:00.
Oh, yeah? With who?
I cannot see you. With our whole West Coast, East Coast.
Oh, really? Department. Well, Ron is here, isn't he?
Yeah, Ron's here.
Oh, I know, because I was supposed to come with him on the same plane.
Invite him into the conference. That's important. You want that song,
okay,
right?
You'll come down.
We'll come down. I'll hold this and we'll come down. I'll come down.
Right.
Yeah, if there's a conference, I want to be in on it. Okay. Don DeVito wants me, doesn't he? Listen, I want the boss to come to our party. Springsteen, you'll arrange that.
Okay.
I'll come down.
Okay.
Bye. I'll bring him, too.
Okay.
The other guy.
I'm ready. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Well, you guys have been carrying all over town, making television appearances. This must be relaxing for you. Just look at each other. You don't have to primp.
I used to hang out with Joe before he got sick. I hung out with him at the hospital. I'm hanging out with him now in television studios, radio studios. I mean, nothing is different. Nothing has changed.
I can't believe that Joseph Heller was ever sick.
I can't believe it either. And it's only when I look back and read the book, No Laughing Matter, that I remember I was sick.
As a matter of fact, I didn't know Joe was in terror until I read the book myself, because even while we were writing chapter by chapter, I kind of skimmed through his chapter because I was very anxious to get to mine. So I knew where he started and I knew where he ended, but then I got on to mine. And it was only when I was in Europe after the galleys came that I read his chapters, and I was amazed and shocked that Joe was experiencing terror, that he thought he might die. He never evidenced that to any of us. I mean, his friends never knew that Joe felt that way.
It was something like out of Catch-22. I knew it, however. I knew it long before page 6 in the New York Post, as you referred to in No Laughing Matter, because my wife was one of your nurses at Mount Sinai. I think you had moved to the private room by that time.
Oh, yes.
She was not a private duty nurse. She was a staff nurse at that time, and so she looked in on you and a number of times, and even took a book over of mine for you to sign.
Yes, I remember now. We're going back now to early 82.
So I have that information before page 6.
You also probably knew through her more about the ailment or disease than I did, because nobody told me what it was and what the prognosis was, other than the fact that the prognosis is favorable. But I didn't know that favorable meant that it might take months or years before I'd be able to take care of myself again. Had I known that, I wouldn't have been as cheerful as Speed and my other friends found me.
Well, I know that you probably were, as Speed said, in terror, because this, what's happening? What's happening to me? Although I did know, from what my wife told me, that this is not a fatal disease and people recover from it, although it sometimes, in some instances, takes a long time. Toward the end of the book, for example, you cite letters and meetings that you had with other people who had Guillain-Barré, and some of them, it took a long time to
recover. Yes, much, much longer than with me, and with perhaps 50 or 60%, there is a failure of the respiratory muscles, which requires a tracheostomy, which means that the person, while hooked up to a mechanical ventilating machine, will not be able to talk. Luckily, I was able to talk, and luckily, I never felt any pain or any symptoms of illness. So I felt absolutely fine for most of this, except for the fact I couldn't move most of my muscles.
One thing I noticed, Speed, in No Laughing Matter, is that there's such a genial approach to the book. Everybody, in spite of the horror that you went through, Jill, All through the book, I seem to sense a feeling that, well, there was a good-natured feeling, a good-spirited feeling.
I think there were several reasons for that. I think one of them was the fact that we didn't think he was terribly ill and that we just felt he would recover. We didn't know how long it would take, but nevertheless, as Joe says, he was in no pain, and he was very cheerful. He was a wonderful patient. He really was. So we weren't stupid enough to come up there to try and cheer him up. All we did was to come up there to be with one another. And as a result, we merely bantered back and forth. Sometimes the things we said were amusing. And Joe was always laughing, even at our dumb jokes. I mean, he was very good.
Well, I want to ask you, Professor, you can give it to me straight. Now, here, I know you're out promoting the book. You and Joe Heller have been friends for many, many years. And yet, throughout No Laughing Matter, the book is filled with friendly insults. For example, you write about the time that you were moving, I believe it was a refrigerator or a sofa, I can't remember. But
it was a heavy refrigerator.
Yeah, about five people, and here's Joe at the stairs supervising it, you know. So all the way through, you give us little glimpses into Joe's personality. And I just wonder, since you have done that, is Joe still speaking to you?
Oh, sure. Joe never stopped speaking to me, or ordering me around is the way I would put it. He was all the things that I said he was in the book. And none of them are flattering. And that was Joe Heller before he was sick. And yet, there was something about Joe that we understood underneath all that garbage, there was a really decent fellow. Otherwise, we're not stupid. We wouldn't have been with him. When he was in the hospital, suddenly his manifestations changed. He was very sweet. He was very patient. He went to touch me one day and say thank you, and it almost brought me to tears. Even though we speak very irreverently to one another, we make fun of handicaps and that kind of black humor. But I was very touched by that.
I wasn't trying to touch him. I was trying to push him out of the room. I had enough of his company. I'd given his errands for that day. One of the reasons that the book, I think, does have... I guess such optimism and cheerfulness is that we didn't begin to write it until I was out of the hospital and until I had good reason to believe I would recover enough to be able to write it, because I was working on God knows. And my improvement is slow but gradual. So by the time we began writing the book, I was grateful and thankful and had gone through an experience which is, I suppose, in many ways devastating, but had survived it, and was having one of the most unusual and perhaps happiest summers of my life, recovering with Speed and with Valerie Humphreys, the theorist out there, and a steady stream of visitors coming to see me and come inviting us to lunch and dinner. So, and we were able then, or I was able then, to look back on this experience and see the happy ending to it.
Is there indeed, as Speed just indicated, a new Joseph Heller?
I would doubt it very much. I still would not help them lift the refrigerator unless the refrigerator was necessary for the well-being or life of somebody, and unless it was impossible to get somebody else to do it. When I refused to help them carry the refrigerator up, I was willing to pay whatever it would cost to get professional moving men to do it.
The only reason he didn't want to move it was because it was an empty refrigerator. If it was a full refrigerator, he would have had it up there.
I would have been down there. I remember saying very seriously, I'm not going to do for you people what I wouldn't do for myself. If this was my refrigerator and I had to get up there, I would hire a moving company to do it.
Speed, your life has changed as radically as Joe's after this illness, hasn't it? Tell me about that.
It has and it hasn't. Actually, I never had a bad day in my life. I've had a very good life, and I had a good life before Joe got sick. Friendships have always been terribly important to me, and I had wonderful friends all my life. And so it didn't change dramatically. The only thing that really changed dramatically was that all my life I've been looking for something to do that would be rewarding. And I never thought of writing a book. I mean, I've tried many, many things. I even tried tasting herring at Zabar's. But I never tried writing, and I never suspected that there was something wrong with the fact that all my best friends were writers. And I never attempted it. And so that was a very exciting thing to do. And Joe, when I asked him, Joe, you really think I can do this? He said, yes, he's lying.
No, he was lying. Why not try it?
Yeah, he did say that. But I
said, no, you can't.
He also interrupts me all the time, which is obnoxious, but what can I say? Anyway, two friends who were writers gave me advice. One said, don't write until you have the advance. Don't begin before you get the advance. And the other said, don't write until you've spent the advance. Because what do you have to write for if you've got money? Now, I did neither of those things. I put it in the bank because I really felt this was never going to be a book. I really felt it was not going to happen. So I had the money intact in order to return it.
Of course, there is this rumor now that the book is out. Of course, in the book, you and Joe alternate chapters with a few parenthetical asides. But there is a rumor going around all throughout the city that you actually wrote the Joseph Heller chapters.
Yes, and he wrote mine. It was too easy the other way.
Speed Vogel said he never had a bad day in his life. Now, he's new at the writing game. I think he's going to have an awful day the first time we get a bad review.
We had a bad review, and I survived.
A bad review? It must have been in the Village Voice.
No, it was from a friend of mine. Well, who was an author.
This was your first effort. I believe you started initially to write the book on your own, didn't you?
That's right. I did, and it was my project, and Joe called me one day, although Joe inspired the idea that I accept it. And he called me one day and he said, Speed, if you don't mind, I'd like to co-author this book with you. And I said, well, Joe Heller, the author of Catch-22, is asking me this question. It must be crazy. But nevertheless, I told him, well, let me think about it. And then I said yes.
You write in No Laughing Matter about your existence before Guillain Barré, and you were living in the flower area of Manhattan, as I recall, right?
Yes.
In the loft. And all of a sudden, you found yourself in the position of moving into Joe's apartment. And was that, you kind of imply here, that was a big step up. You were living in a more grander scale than you had before. Tell me about that.
Well, actually, that's poetic license to some degree. Where I was living was terribly cluttered and messy and unclean, but had a certain kind of charm and attractiveness, otherwise I wouldn't have stayed there. When I moved to Joe's apartment, it was fresh and new. There were doormen. There were people that thought I was Joe. They deferred to me, and all that was very nice, and it was also much more convenient. I had been decorating the apartment anyway, so it was purely to my taste, so it was the best place to go.
Now, Joe, you make some admissions in this book, one of which is an insurance bill. I think it was only $140.
$130.
Tell me, why didn't you pay this bill? And what happened because you didn't?
What happened because I didn't was that 80% of about $80,000 in medical bills would have been covered by this major, major medical insurance policy. And the reason it wasn't paid was, I believe, that somewhere in the confusion of a marriage breaking up, the mail was not forwarded. Or if it was forwarded, I did not pay enough attention to the premium notice, and there would have been a follow-up to the premium notice. This is what's called an umbrella policy. Everything over $10,000, 80% of everything over $10,000 would have been paid for by this policy. Guillain Barré, ironically, because most people don't die and do recuperate, is one of the most expensive ailments that people could get. This policy would have paid 80% of at least $80,000, and I did not pay the premium, which was $132, even though I had the policy for 4 or 5 years.
Yes, in No Laughing Matter, you go into great detail about the cost of this illness and other expenses. And it's frightening.
I've been asked if I've learned anything from the experience. I give the same answer. People think I'm being witty or attempting to be witty. I'm being dead serious. I said the first thing I learned, and perhaps the most important thing I've learned, is that a person in this country cannot have too much major medical coverage.
You're going to have to not allow 10-year intervals between books from now on.
Oh, no. I mean, this followed, God knows, by less than 2 years.
That's a record for you, isn't it?
Well, another good effect of this disease, that have been many, many unpredictable blessings that have come out of this situation. One of them is that I no longer live in Manhattan. I do live outside the city where I thought I'd never be able to survive. And because I live there, I'm able to work more, since there's nothing else to do but work. I finished God Knows in half the time I thought it would take. I was about a third through when I got sick. When I sold the rights, I told the editor, frankly, it will take me about 3 years to complete. I completed less than a year and a half, and while completing that, in my mind, I was outlining my chapters for No Laughing Matter. I'm ready to start another novel next week.
I'm calling him Speed Heller. He's calling me Joe Vogel.
Now, Speed, you've had a great success with No Laughing Matter. Your name is right on the front cover of this book, right?
Oh,
below Joseph Heller's. It could have been above it, but it's below it.
Well, it was alphabetical order.
Well, that's...
I had to accept
that's
that.
Literally true. It's that's true. But when are you going to start your novel?
Oh, I don't know. I may try brain surgery before that, since I learned a lot in the hospital. I don't really don't know what I'm going to do next. And I know that just letting things happen to me has worked for me, so I'm not going to plan a thing.
Well, you're certainly good at arranging very inexpensive overseas vacations. You can
yes.
do that for your friends and acquaintances and yourself. I mean,
no, there's only that much room in Europe.
Joe, now it's been 3 years now since you have recovered, 2 years since you recovered.
I got sick at the end of 81. The most of what's covered in No Laughing Matter takes place in 82, and this is 86. It's close to 4 years, I think. How much is 81 from 85? 4 years. I'm in the fifth year now since I got the disease.
Now, how about your? You certainly look healthy. As a matter of fact, when I saw you when God Knows came out, you looked healthy. But have there been any reoccurrences or after effects?
The after effects are here, and if you see me when I walk out, you'll notice it. And if we were having lunch, you would notice that my hands might tremble, but my left more than my right. Most of my muscles are not what they would used to be. Some seem to be getting better, as others seem to be getting worse. The latter, I think, just being a concomitant of age. I can do everything I want to do. I consider myself 100% recovered, although I'm about 80% recovered. I'm not handicapped in any way. I can eat as much as I want to. I can't eat as rapidly as I used to, but I can and do eat as much as I want to.
So you feel good as gold?
Oh, I've not been, incidentally,
so to speak,
good as gold, and I've noticed this, and two people who I write about in the book and whom I've been in touch with say this, report the same thing. Since they had Guillain-Barré, they have not been ill with even a serious cold, and I haven't either. Now, I'm not recommending Guillain-Barré syndrome as a cure for colds.
Now, Speed, Joe just mentioned a moment ago eating, and he doesn't eat as rapidly as before. But tell me a little bit about the Gourmet Club. Is that still in effect?
It really should be the Gourmand Club, because we're not discriminating. As Joe puts it, quantity is still much more important than quality, and he will eat a lot of good food if it's there, but he'd eat a lot of any food provided it's provided for him. When he was in the hospital and they were feeding him through his nose, he was taking tremendous amounts of food. I mean, really tremendous, and talking all the while, because you can do that with a nasogastric tube. And we were amazed, and so were some of the nurses.
In fact, I just recently learned from this nurse who I fell in love with then and I'm still in love with, that there was concern about my taking in so many quantities, so much at each feeding, because if I regurgitated, I did not have enough strength in my throat muscles to bring the regurgitated food up to my mouth. and it might get into my lungs.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I was in the hospital one day when the nurse asked, if I'm feeding you too fast or too much, just tell me. If you feel like regurgitating, tell me. And Joe said, if it goes in, I never give back.
Speed, tell me about what you're doing now. Have you moved back down to your loft?
No, I've rented out my loft. I rented a house in East Hampton.
He's become a landlord.
Yeah, and I rented a house in East Hampton, which belongs to our friend Joseph Stein, who doesn't use it during the winter, and that's where I'm holed up. And I find it very pleasant. So I come into the city only when I have to. I share Joe's desire not to be here if we don't have to be here. We like it living out in East Hampton.
Well,
he and his house and me and mine.
He's fallen into the habit of spending each summer abroad.
Yeah, I do that. No, it costs a little more than that, but we can afford it.
Well, my last question is, the two of you look very good, like a matched set. extremely well. And I just want to know, outside of the appearances that you're making now to promote the book, are you still hanging out together?
The answer is yes, and not simply for commercial reasons. I think Joe wants me to do another book with him. I'm not so sure I want to.
What disease will you cover?
Yeah, I don't want him to get sick for me, but if he manages to get something that'll make him cheerful, pleasant, patient, he can have it. I'll give it to him.
What about a biography of Speed?
I do a biography.
Sure.
Speed. I have to wait for to reach a climax. He's just starting.
I'm too young for that.
Speed, years ago, when I was writing Something Happened, I used a lot of lines from my friend. Fortunately, he forgot he said it, and he still forgets. But he once said, the trouble with me is he was then past 50, but he said, the trouble is, I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up. Now, I have to wait to decide what he wants. So he may decide that the literary life is really not for him. And then I'd have to wait to see what he does before I begin doing biography.
Well, I don't think Speed is going to find writers boring. I think if he doesn't write himself, he's going to hang around writers.
He was hanging around with writers before he wrote the book, and he did find us boring very often.
Thank you very much, both of you, for coming in. It was charming seeing the two of you together, and I appreciate you coming in. Glad you're better. And one good thing out of this, if you can call it a good thing, I guess it's a good thing, economic survival means a lot. And so I know this means you'll be writing more and more, and I'm anxious for you to get back to Long Island next week and start that new novel. So you can come back in a year or so, and we'll talk again.
Okay.
Thank you, Don.
Thank you.